Ecclesiastes 3. I wish to hell I had never gotten an Ecclesiastes. It's going to take us 600 years to get through it.
Are we never getting out of Ecclesiastes? Cheryl's favorite book.
We never leave it with you.
Ecclesiastes 3. Finished verse 10 where it says, I have seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of men. It's like, we've gone through this so much, but you forget. You can't read the Bible as an observer. You have to read it as a prophecy of what's happening to you at this instant. One of these days, we were going to do that. I need to do it about once a year to return you back to the Hebrew concept of time, because it's totally different than our concept. But there's no history in Hebrew. There's only prophecy. And the idea then of the word, and this totally blows your mind when you try to think about it, because it's not that, and God said, let there be light. It's, and God is saying, let there be light. It's not that I have seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of man. It's, I am seeing the travail which God hath given to the sons of men. You can't possibly watch a newscast or honestly look at your own life or look around you without seeing the travail. Your natural order, your natural phenomenon is to try to avoid the travail at all cost. But I have seen, or I am seeing, the travail which God is giving to the Son of Man, me, you, to be exercised therein. That doesn't mean, it means to be humbled therein. To be humbled towards what end? Your mind will always think to be humbled towards the end so that I can do it better the next time. He hath made everything beautiful, and it's in his time. Also, he has set the world in their heart that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. As I said before, the idea that everything is beautiful in its time is totally and completely, it's something that man cannot believe. He can sort of sing songs about it and all that, but he can never believe it. Because the idea that some terrible, terrible argument that you would have, or the death of a loved one, or, you know, all of the myriad of things that happen to the sons of men, that could be beautiful in his time is beyond the pale.
Yeah.
But Rabbi said all kinds of stuff about this, and we're going to talk about it in a minute. I won't go into all of the arcane details, but because of the structure of the words, and that he hath made everything beautiful in his time, it's an indicator that he created another world prior to this one, and then destroyed it until he got the present one. And then he said, this pleases me, the other did not.
God trying to get it right.
God getting it right. But there's another component to this, he hath made everything beautiful in his time. And that is, the component that has to do with experience, with I mean, he's saying he has made everything beautiful in his time, and yet he's also saying vanity of vanity, all is vanity. And it's, if one had never eaten a piece of bread, and then he declares everything is beautiful in its time, I mean, if he's been so poor he's only eaten dandelions, and he runs around and then says, he made everything beautiful in his time, his thoughts are null. I mean, it can't, it has nothing to communicate. Do you understand that? Okay, in Solomon's case, the man that said this, Solomon's provision for one day was 30 measures of fine flour. Therefore, it was appropriate for him to declare, I mean, 30 measures is bunches. If he had never eaten a slice of bread, but he's saying he has made everything beautiful in his time, it doesn't, let me give you some examples.
Is that like people that are, it's like their lives are a total wreck, but they keep saying, but you know, God's got a purpose.
Yeah.
It's just they don't believe it.
Yeah. And there, let me quote some of these others and you'll get a better picture of it. In like manner, if one had declared vanity of vanities and had never owned 2 farthings, his statement is null and void. But with Solomon, and the king made silver to be as stones in Jerusalem, it was appropriate for him to declare it.
Like, how would you know if you didn't have that?
If another had declared, and all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing, if he had never ruled over 2 flies, his statement was null and void.
That's us.
So that's what Peter's doing to this people.
But not so with Nebuchadnezzar, who in this of whom it is said, and wheresoever the children of men, the beasts of the field, and the fowls of heaven dwell, hath he given them into thy hand, and hath made thee to rule over all. And then when God took everything away from Nebuchadnezzar, then he said, and all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. Now, I'm coming to some, so let me if another of the heathen wise men uttered this verse, quote, now I know that the Lord is greater than all the gods, I might have said that this man does not understand the real nature of idolatry. But Jethro, who spoke it, did not omit a single form from idolatry in the world without turning to it and serving it.
You're all like that one.
Was Jethro new?
And so there, what I'm trying to come to here is you cannot say he has created everything beautiful in his time unless you have either experienced it or empathized it. It can't be a philosophy. That's why the philosophy of beggars and, you know, in the late 50s I spent, oh, it seems like forever, but I lived in Greenwich Village. And I just hung around in the coffee shops and listened to the poetry and the all-night discussions and the music and because I, you know, I had Jack Kerouac, I can't ever pronounce his name right. Kerouac was my hero. And Mort Saul was my only other hero.
I never knew that.
And so, because of those two, I took off and went to play the beatnik game for a while.
Did you hitchhike and everything?
And I was never so, on a stolen credit card. But I was never, it was just totally ridiculous, because these guys that were saying things that maybe approached truth every once in a while were like, they were intellectual beggars who had never had anything in their life, and they were speaking from the standpoint of envy, even though they didn't say that. It's like, you can't, the words that you will say, if you went around, you know, if you're out there striving and working your ass off to get ahead and you're running around saying vanity of vanities, all is vanity, I mean, you become a lie. You become a living lie. If you are if you are out there saying, praise God, the only thing I have to do is abandon myself, live for the stimulus of the moment, and have never experienced the law, you're a liar. You're living in sloth. In other words, you have to have it. You cannot live off the fact that I say.
Right.
I mean, am I communicating?
Yeah.
It has to be something that you've experienced. I mean, some of you, you take this thing of abandonment of self, and it becomes an excuse for sloth. I mean, but you can't reach the point of abandonment of self until you've experienced, spiritually what you are, you're like this guy that had never been ruler over two flies, and you're saying the inhabitants of the earth are as nothing.
This is like forgiveness.
Yeah.
It's like Abraham, man. He did everything until he got bored with it.
And so, I mean, it's like you all have to be, you can't take either my words or his words or anybody else's words and apply them. I mean, then your religious experience and your walk with God is a lie.
Yeah, tattoos, like you're just a sponge, spiritual tattoos on your body.
Yeah, you've just, your words become your phylacteries.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean? Bumper stickers.
They're just, you make broad your phylacteries to be seen of men. Well, neither does negative thinking. That's why most of you have always angered.
In this case, to say everything is beautiful in his time, to try and make that true by believing it, is trying to use positive mind shift to make it happen.
Yeah, but also the same thing, to say that vanity of vanities, all is vanity, without you believing it, is just as evil. It's just like the positive confessionists.
Yeah.
So what's the answer then? Because, I mean, I've had a my life's been a B movie. I mean, when you really look at it, I mean, it's been a wild, weird life. And I can, you know, I've been essentially in every country of the world. I've been a millionaire. I've worked in the advance man in the White House. I've done a lot of things in my life. For me to say vanity of vanities, all is vanity, in that limited arena, then it has some merit. When Rex can say, pretty soon Rex is about to say it, but when he can say vanity of vanities, all is vanity, we probably will be in about
30-40 seconds,
you know, then it has merit, because, you know, he's experienced it. He's almost, I mean, he's got one or two strings left to cut, but he's almost there. But if Angela is running around saying it, vanity of vanities, all is vanity.
Just like that kid that's on TV preaching his great
God.
Now, I mean, what's the answer then? The answer is very simple. Is that it's not your business. You hear the preaching and it'll speed up time. But you still have got to be honest to the stimuli that are within you. You still have to fulfill the sin of the Amorite. When Abraham experienced the horror of great darkness, he heard somebody preach. And then he said, but yet you have 400 years in this arena of travail because the sin of the Amorite is not yet complete. What that means is that you have to go through the process yourself. You can't live off the words of even the word.
I'll tell you a rugged example of this is when I was 18, I heard you. And, you know, you were saying the same thing you're saying tonight. Didn't mean anything. I would go around and repeat it. And it had no power, no nothing. I mean, you know, I can only imagine how I must have sounded to certain people around me. But, you know, coming back, I had experienced some things that I could call vanity on my own, and that I knew to be vanity because I'd experienced them. It's a whole different deal.
And the point of it is, the thing that you have to come to the certainty of is that you have to appreciate your own uniqueness. In other words, there is an expression in the economy of God that caused you to come into this understanding now, as opposed to 5 years ago or 5 years from now. And you're brought into it in a state of total uniqueness. There's no cookie-cutter Christianity. And it's important that you fill up that sin of the Amorite. You've got to... You can't hear. That's why I tell you 1,000,000,000,000 times, if you hear what I say is something that you should do, you've missed what I've said. It's only the bottom line is that the foolishness of preaching causes your mind to confront these issues openly and honestly, and as opposed to ignoring them and slipping them into another room. You know, it's not only this Father's house that has many mansions, or your mansion has an infinite number of rooms that you keep trying to slide information into and then hide it. And most of you now are like you're walking on tiptoes through this haunted house, and you're afraid to open those doors. If you let them open, I don't know how to say it any better. You don't have to be afraid of anything, even those hidden doors in your thingy. I mean, you are, the reason that haunted houses have eternally been frightening to the human race is because they're a picture of you.
That's good.
All you have to do is open the door. There's no ghost that can withstand the light. Now think of the ghosts that are still chasing you. You've been successful in locking them in a particular room or a closet. But they're working for God too. And some of them are badasses.
Yeah, they're getting overtime.
This reminds me of when I was in Peoria, they had a haunted house.
Ooh, that's a scary place.
Yeah, really, that alone was so scary. But you go into the haunted house and everybody, you know, it's real like a maze and everybody's jumping out and scaring you. And then they take a break. And like you can go, if you know the people, you can go behind the thing of the haunted house and everybody's taking off their uniforms and their makeup and stuff. I mean, there's nothing, the next time you go through, there's absolutely nothing to fear, you know, because it's just weird.
I worked in a haunted house.
Yeah, no, no,
that's good.
Things are cool. That's very good.
That's made lots of kids cry.
He was a cool, like the Disaster on 47th Street.
What the bottom line of this is that there is a certain agony within you that takes place when you try to believe some of this stuff. It's like Yeah, well, I can. I have not been in your position, so I can't relate to it, but I can sense it. That you hear these wild things that you know, they go, oh shit, you know, you really
know what it's like.
And then you automatically you know, you sort of try to either totally ignore it or try to act like you're living it. Well, if you're 4 years old and your father is trying to tell you how to have relationships, sexual relationships, it won't make any sense. It'll be like, or yeah, but I mean, it'll be like... Well, I mean, it's that's what you hear it as, though. It's like you're trying to get a hard on at four. Or...
A weird example.
No, I mean, it's like you can't... That's why sexuality is such a great example of the walk in the Spirit, because, I mean, there are not a lot of male whores. The reason is that there's not a lot of males that can control the cerebral cortex of their brain to the extent that they can get a hard on at will. And so male whoredom is a freak, because for some unknown, really chemical dysfunction in his system, they can control it. What they have a control over the part of the cerebral cortex that allows them to, you know, at will release the hormone. Well, that's an unnatural act, because you're trying to accomplish, this is your heritage. It isn't what you try to do. So the next time I hear one of you saying, well, I'm just supposed to abandon myself, it's the evidence that you're trying to get a spiritual heart on, and you're not able to.
God, oh, you are so weird.
No, yeah. It's perfect. It's a perfect picture. It's a perfect picture. You know, all this has made me think about is, you know, just the things I've heard in the past about how bananas... You know, Bananas isn't going to have the time that Stealth did. You know, Bananas is
this or Bananas.
You know, Bananas is this or Bananas is that. Or we don't have time. Time's been sped up. And, you know, I just never really feel... I mean, this is a surprise to me to hear this. Because it's like you're saying, it's not a matter really of having time or not having time. It's just a matter of where we are right now. You know, it's I mean, we can't... We don't have to apologize for where we are right now.
Right.
And I think I've been spending a lot of time just in my own mind going, you're not where you're supposed to be, you know, and it's like, you know, get that hard on.
Get it up, Matt.
Get it up. And that, just now I saw that is a picture of my sex life. The same pressure that I feel internally about sex. Performance and sex is the same thing I feel and experience about my spiritual condition.
It's
ding. Yeah. Just this light bulb is like, ding.
He hath made everything beautiful in his time. Can you feel the idea that we, just as certain as there is a corporeal body that you dwell in, and it went through all of the stages and all of the things, and, you know, in order for there to be movement, there had to be antagonism.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and there had to be appointed times, and there's an appointed time to start thinking of self, appointed time to start crawling, appointed time to start walking, appointed time to, you know, All of it. Well, so far more. All of that is only a vain shadow of the picture that we are in the spirit as one body. And each one of the members of that body, you know, you come to a point where you've tried and tried and tried to get it right and tried to do this and tried to do that. Well, he said this or that's about it. Forget it all. Just forget everything. And say, he will perform that which he has appointed me to do. I mean, you're going to get your balls busted and your asses beat, and just like all other kids did. But he will perform that which he has appointed you to do. Anything else is a lie. I promise you that. Amen?
It is finished.
But you can't act like it's finished if you don't believe it's finished.
Yeah, I picked up Lita, and I went out to Arca too. I heard when we got her, and she was, you know, she seemed to be okay, and she was skipping around her house and doing stuff. And I said, she came out the door, she's ready to get in the car, and I said, look, if you feel like shit, you don't have to act like you don't feel like shit. But, you know, because it was funny to be telling to that to somebody who's been here. You know, for a good while now. But it was,
a good while.
But hey.
I didn't feel like shit then.
No, part of it had gone into another room.
I'm not in control of that either.
That's right. He's destroying rooms, though, so there's just one us.
Yeah, it's like a nuclear attack.
Man?
Yeah.
Well, this with that.
One verse down.
We didn't even get in the car to start the engine.
Well, tomorrow night we got some neat stuff.
Several more chapters to go.
Take it, big guy.